Welcome to Get a Grip with Max Homa and Shane Bacon, a production of iHeartRadio. Sports fans, golf fans, or just fans, welcome to another episode of Get a Grip with Max Homa and Shane Bacon. This time, actually, we have Max Homa on the podcast. Last week, we had a fill-in, Max. I gave him an A+. I thought Joel Damon was unbelievable.
Yeah, sorry I couldn't be with everybody last week, but I thought Joel was awesome. I wouldn't give him an A+ because that means that, you know, that means that he was too good. I'll give him like an A-. You know, he did great. I don't know what I would critique, but I just have to give him an A-. That's just what I have to do as someone who's replaced me for a week.
Yeah, a lot of Tom Brady talk on social media about letting somebody in like that. Did you have anything specific that you would tell Joel, maybe, like, after being such an experienced journalist like yourself now and media member, is there anything you would have maybe critiqued him on, told him he could have done better, he could improve on next time he comes on?
I am not in a position to critique. I think that's more your avenue, considering okay. You're the pro in this area. I can't critique his golf game or his media game because I am hardly a media member and he has been a better golfer as of late. So I'm going to keep my mouth shut. I thought he was good. My one biggest frustration with him was I could not believe he didn't know the Pasatiempo logo. I'm not a big logo guy, but that's my all-time favorite. So I thought we were a little bit more similar. But yeah, the guy with the sombrero sitting under the palm tree, all-time favorite logo. So that was a little disappointing. I mean, you know, he could be a little bit more well-read, well-versed in the golf logo world. But other than that, he was great. You know, I honestly was really appreciative that he could get in there. I think it was even better that, you know, he would be good any week, but the week, you know, or the day right after he, you know, contended in a major championship and played so well. I thought that was really cool to even just for me, just to listen to what he was thinking about. And I was really happy he talked about the, you get a house story. I thought that was great.
it was awesome. Everybody sent the video that they had, that they pulled off the internet. They sent it in on Twitter and I was happy to see every single one of them. I did want to let you know something, about myself. And this is something I think you know, but I've been to Bandon Dunes before. And so when what? I was consuming, I've been to the golf course. I could tell you a lot about some of the courses and holes. If you want me to dive deep into like 12 or 15, I could do that for you. But the U.S. Amateur obviously was at Bandon Dunes this weekend and it was on prime time. And it seemed like everybody in the golf world was watching it. But I wanted to make sure you knew that information to start. Because, you seem like the kind of guy that would appreciate knowing who has been and who hasn't.
You know, that's funny you say that because my Feel Good Friday was that it was just really exciting to see how excited people who've played Bandon were to talk about Bandon. Like, I was really happy for them and it honestly made me laugh. So it was a win-win. I have nothing against Bandon, as some people may said on Twitter. Don't really get how that got started. I thought it was just very funny. It's actually, honestly, like I said, that's why it's my Feel Good Friday. It is a good thing. It is a destination, a bucket list golf place. Just like, you know, I think Justin Leonard said 75 times that it's a bucket list golf place. But it is cool to see how excited people get that they've gotten to be there. And that shows you how important the golf course is. I've never been. So it's just kind of one of those funny, like every time it comes up and I, you know, let's just say, oh man, I'd love to go there. There's one guy in the room that's like, then tells me about all, you know, six golf courses. It's just a lot. So it just makes me laugh. It's not like I obviously don't care, guys. It's really cool that everyone could be that excited about playing just like a few golf courses. That's really, really awesome. But this was just like the perfect Twitter week, considering it was on TV and the biggest amateur event in the world. And you could just see people be like, oh, you know, there, and you did. I mean, it's just, I'm obviously just poking fun, but oh, 11, you're dead if you're left on 11. Let me tell you, I've been there. You're dead left on 11. It's like, I get it, man. Like, this could be any week ever. We would know that that is probably not the best spot. But it was cool for me to actually get to see the golf course because I think I understood why it had the hype. I understood that it was the width and angles and, you know, the elements and it's firm and, you know, you know, all that stuff. But to be able to actually see it, I was a little bummed that there weren't more golf courses shown. I thought it would have been maybe, I guess, not the best championship, but really cool viewing experience to actually play a different course every day or close to a different course every day. But man, what an awesome golf course. I get it. I get it now. But man, it was what a fun time to watch people just be so excited they've been there. That for me, yeah. For me.
So Joel Klatt, friend of the program, made a hole in one a few months ago, like maybe 2 or 3 months ago. And he texted me, he said, you know, the one thing about making a hole in one, of course I would know this, is everybody just wants to tell you their hole in one story. So it's always congrats. I personally made a 7-iron from, you know, 165 at X golf course, whatever. Yep. And I felt like a little of the same, you know, it's to your point, man, that guy's dead on 15. It's like, yeah, I remember when I was there, exactly. I played 15. Exactly. It's like, I was kind of dead there as well, you know? and so I do think that conversation, you know, as much as you and I talk about the negativity on social media, especially on Twitter, I did feel like there was this communal sense of people just talking about a place that, for the most part, I mean, most people have been. I mean, I know not everybody's been, and I know a lot of people would love to go. I know a lot of people said on Twitter that they would love to go with you and I.
Yeah,
throwing awesome. Themselves at yeah, for
sure. So it's vacation. Like, hey, we're gonna go on a little vacation with a couple other people.
What did we do? What did we text each other? It's like you know what the best part of my week is, the pro am. Yeah. So I definitely want to expand that into a whole vacation on my week off. But no offense to you guys, I appreciate you guys saying you'd be interested, but. I wanted to ask you about the US Amateur. I mean,
wait, can I cut
USA?
You off really quick? Sorry. Yeah. I didn't want to forget this point. The biggest thing for me with the golf Twitter, when you get on a golf course that is so well renowned, I joke that it's called the woke golf Twitter, but like, you guys know what I mean. Like just the like progressively thought Twitter world. That, you know, the golf courses need to be like banded, like width and angles, like I mentioned before, firm, fast. Like I'm all in on that too, by the way. But I'm just going to show this a little bit of like hypocrisy. Part of this is because it was match play, but yesterday's match, and the day before, the golf course is so easy, right? If there's no wind, like it's really easy. Yesterday we're commending how great their golf is, 12 birdies and an eagle, and like there are 14 birdies and an eagle or something like that on the first 18 hole match. And that's awesome. If that was a PGA Tour event and it was a US Open, they would be vilifying the golf course for how easy it is. And I only bring that up because of Erin Hills. Erin Hills is one of the harder golf courses I've played. Shane has it on his hat right now. Very nice. I didn't even notice that. But that's like a little weird osmosis thing. I must have seen it and then it started getting the wheels turning. But you know, it's one of the harder golf courses I had played. Because when I played there, the wind blew like it does all the time, and it comes almost crosswind off every tee, and the fescue is in play on every tee shot. Then I watch in the US Open, and it looks really, really, not doesn't look really easy, but they ripped it up. I mean, 16 under or something, one, I think Brooks shot something around there. And the golf course gets absolutely blasted. Oh my God, these pros are so soft. It's a player run tour. They don't like hard golf courses. It's like, well, yeah, I mean, it would have been hard if the wind blew. I mean, like, that's just that's how the golf course plays. So Bandon, I know part of it's because it's match play, but everyone's going nuts about how great the golf is and how amazing the golf course is. And it's like, I watched it and I was like, you know, I agree, but I don't also, you know, bitch and moan when the golf course has low scores. So I just want to say that, you know, I understand everybody loves the golf course. I love it too. You can't keep blasting other places when it's easy if the wind doesn't blow. Like that's a big part of all golf courses. This one, definitely in particular, but if we went there, I promise you this weekend and it had 6-mile-an-hour winds, which I know is abnormal, but it's also abnormal Erin Hills, the winning scores would have been so low. You would have hated it. And, or maybe not hated it, but I'm just saying you can't, you can't play one side. Like in my opinion,
right. You can't have one and not have the other,
but again, I like watching it. I just want people to see that, like, just because the course has a great reputation like this, you know, doesn't, you can't play, like you said, you can't play both sides. You can't just like take that on and say, oh, well, it's always windy. It's like, yeah, that's what I was saying at Erin Hills. And you guys are like, that's the stupidest golf course I've ever seen. It's so easy. It's like, it's freaking so hard. The fairways are wide for the same reason they're wide at Bandon. It is windy as hell at Erin Hills.
Right. I mean, I think about, you know, what's the most famous golf course in the world? It's the old course of St. Andrews, right? And every time that golf course comes up in conversation now, especially around an open, like hosting the next Open Championship, people go, man, it's going to become obsolete with the technology and with the equipment, which I don't disagree with. But Rory McIlroy in an Open Championship shot 63-80.
Yeah.
And it's because the condition, back-to-back rounds, yep. and it's because the conditions changed. And to your point, when Bandon, when it blows at Bandon Dunes, it's a very hard golf course. When you look at the qualifying scores this past week, you know, during stroke play when they played Trails and Bandon, there were some unbelievable golfers. I mean, Matt Parziali, you know, shooting 80 at Bandon Dunes because it blew hard that day. And then as we saw during the championship match, when it lays down, it's a birdie fest. That's how that golf course is going to play because it's not overly long. The fairways are friendly. The greens are friendly. They're not super undulated. You know, it's one of those places, to your point, that a professional golf event there is going to need elements to make it tough. Now, I do want to ask you this, because going back to kind of the woke Twitter, they love piling on the PGA Tour when it comes to you guys' approach to golf courses. And maybe it's not your approach personally, Max, but it's the tour's approach in terms of it, they set it up a lot of the time to play to whatever the hell they're trying to make it play to. And people sometimes get frustrated by that. Trinity Forest was a golf course that the PGA Tour put on the schedule to be a links style golf course that played different, and you've got to kind of play on the ground, and the players didn't like it. So if tomorrow, instead of the FedEx Cup going to, where are you guys this week? Are you in Boston?
Boston.
Yeah. So if you don't go to Boston this week, so let's say the PGA Tour this week, first FedEx Cup event is at Bandon Dunes, and it blows 20-25 all week. Are the players going to be complaining when they leave, or do you think they would have enjoyed it?
Well, this goes, I guess this kind of ties into what Andy Johnson said this on Twitter at Mark Calcavecchio. Mark was like, man, I'm looking at how windy it was and how difficult Bandon Dunes was, man, it's making me not want to go as much. I have a couple takes about that. We can look at that as what I looked at it as, and I don't think Andy did, and I love you, Andy, but I think this was unfair. Mark was making a joke about how hard it looked to play golf. Most people, especially someone like Mark, who's played a million rounds of golf in his life, doesn't want to go grind anymore, like for a fun day. He's not talking about a tournament. He's talking about, this is where I would take my vacation to relax. Right. Okay. That's where Andy, I feel like, jumped the gun a little bit on him and said, you know, oh, this just shows.
He's trying to go have a couple cocktails and play golf.
He's trying to get drunk and not fall over from the wind. Like, that's right. His main goal. Like, so, okay. But let's just say we looked at it seriously, that Mark was being dead serious. I don't want to play when it's hard out. I don't think anybody in professional golf likes to play, and I'm not just talking about the PGA Tour, anywhere likes to play in the elements, just because, again, we do this so often. You like the easy days, but I don't think I've heard a single tour pro in my life go to the tour on a general week where the scores are really low and tell Jay Monahan, that was a perfect setup. I love how low the scores are. The times when it gets blown up about how, you know, maybe some guys are bitching about it, and I agree with this, is typically just when the pins maybe are in some really odd places for where the wind blows, or they just got off the golf course and they're frustrated. But in general, everybody wants it to be hard. It's the elements that become draining. It's not the golf course. Typically we hear about bitching about the golf course, but it's the elements that make us not want to play, just because, like I said, we do this all year long. It's nice to get the perfect days where it feels like you're not grinding just for your own job. Now, again, if I'm going to go, on a vacation, I personally would like to go to Bandon when it was hard, just because I want to see what it has to offer. But I get Mark Calcavecchia, not like he has seen it all, man.
He's 29 years old.
So if they went to Trinity Forest, now, first off, I also have a little, I don't know if it's confirmed that just all the players didn't like it, so they went away. The tour didn't like it either. There's no trees, so nobody can stand right. under the shade. It's hot as hell.
I know.
I never played it, but it's hot as hell. And the wind didn't blow 2 years in a row, and the golf course got absolutely massacred. Scott Piercy made no bogeys 1 week and lost by like two or three. It got crushed. And do I understand that is a bad circumstance and really bad timing? 100%. I feel bad. I wanted to see the place work. But these golf courses have a lot that needs to be done to them. They need to be able to have stands. They need freaking shade in the summer. Like, you need shade because you need people to come. And you could say, oh, player run, you know, organization, like blah, blah, blah. It's like, yeah, but like, we do need money. Like, that's part of it. That's why some of these cities, we go to the course that might not be the best course in the area, because they're offering up their golf course. They want us to come. We can make money there. And yeah, I just feel like people are being very picky, saying that, TPC Las Colinas is that much worse to watch than what I watched at the Dallas event at Trinity Forest. If it was windy, I think it would have been really fun to watch. But it wasn't at all. Like, it sucked to watch. And I think everyone could agree on that, because you didn't get to see any of the nuances that we typically see. But I just don't, it's not fair to always put it on the players, kicked it off toward the players, hated it. It's like, even if we hate, like, people went and played it. It doesn't matter. Again, it's an entertainment product. It goes to you guys. If it was bringing in amazing numbers and revenue, we would still be there. It doesn't have anything to do with our joy of it. So that's an unfair take. But the thing was it didn't really, it wasn't very spicy when they played. And, I would, if it fits on the schedule, I've played golf courses on tour that I do not like at all because it fits perfect on the schedule, but you play it because of course you're going to play. I'm not going to risk my career because I don't like a golf course, but
right.
I don't know. It doesn't really matter. Maybe you're not going to, it's Dallas. You've never really gotten this mega stars. You'll get DJ here and there. Phil will play. And like I said, most of that is just where it sits on the schedule. It doesn't have a lot to do with the golf course, because TPC Las Colinas is nothing of a golf course. And it's not that we like to go because it's easy and you could shoot really low. That's, nobody really likes that. But there are, there are circumstances on the PGA Tour that stink, especially in the summer. And right now we're seeing it. Everywhere we go is soft. And everywhere we go, we'll get a little bit of wind for a minute. And then the storms come. So then you get the dead period. Then when we come out of the storms, you get the dead period, then a little bit of wind, and then the dead period. And it's soft and calm. I mean, the scores are so freaking low. Nobody likes it. So I don't know what to tell you. It's not like we all go in after and say this course is too hard. The where you see the bitching and the moaning is the US Open, and it's typically justified, or people are sometimes being, kind of babies about it. But typically, if you played that golf course and you saw crusty the greens were and the ball's wobbling while you're trying to putt it, you would be frustrated too. I don't think it's as much. This is a perfect Twitter thing where Tron and he says it all the time about how we just control everything. And it's just not the case. But it's so easy to say that on Twitter that all these pros are so coddled. Somebody said it to me yesterday. Oh, you guys are so coddled. It's like, you just read too much Twitter. Like, I don't know where you're getting this from. We have an input, but I would never just say, ugh, Trinity Forest stinks, Jay Monahan. We need a different, it's like he'd be like, yeah, well, we just made X amount of millions of dollars, so you could suck it up. Like, that's what he would say. So that there's my
let me just say, first of all, this is why I love doing this with you, because you get the perspective of somebody that actually plays on the PGA Tour. And I thought you made some unbelievable points, including the fact, Max, that I worked the first event they did at Trinity Forest. I did the PGA Tour live from site. And my dad came for Marshall, drove 2.5 hours to come and watch. And my dad almost fell out because it was 150 degrees and there's no shade. And he's walking around and I'm out on the golf course, handing him waters, from the coolers that you guys play out of. And he was following Zach Blair. And I'm like, Dad, you're 70 years old. Like, you can't do this. And to your point, it was brutal for everybody in terms of the conditions. I do want to get back to the amateur for a minute, because how many amateurs did you play in?
Four, I think.
Do you remember how old you were? What year your first one was? I mean, I don't have to be perfect, but just around the time.
My first year, I was, just finished my freshman year of college. So I would have been 18.
So can you just, because I never played an amateur. A lot of people listening have never played in a US amateur. We know what the professional events are that are important. The majors, the FedEx Cup, all this stuff. What was it like getting in a U.S. amateur? What was it like going to the U.S. amateur, kind of being in that field? How much bigger did it feel than maybe other events you played in before? Because it does feel like the absolute pinnacle of amateur golf. And I mean, I think that's why, when you put it on a golf course like Bannon, it just seems like a perfect storm for everybody to be interested.
Yeah, totally. I remember qualifying for my first one and I was so hyped. I remember I drove 2 hours. I caddied for myself 36 holes. I made it in a playoff. And I was so excited. I'm making phone calls on the way home. And then all of a sudden, all the phone calls stop. And the whole day just hit me, and I drove to the nearest gas station and bought like a liter of soda because I had so little energy all of a sudden. But that's what the excitement it brings out of you. But yeah, I hadn't played at that point tons of huge events yet, but I had played some. But you know, it's literally just the equivalent of, or I guess like the comparison would be, you know, you go to like, you've been playing public golf courses all your life, and then you go to a country club and you're like, whoa, like this is why this is talked about so much, you know, because it's like the stands at some of these other, you know, tournaments would be stands. You're like, man, these sick, it stands, but like, you know, if it's like 15 people, right. These stands are like, what the hell, man? Like this is
they brought these from the US
yeah.
Open.
Yeah. And it looks just like a US Open. So yeah, you show up and it's just so different. I mean, you're not the, you know, where we would go the, for a high level amateur tournament, typically, a ton of the ambiance, a ton of the, flavor of the event comes from what the golf course is like. Obviously, like they're the ones that puts it on. Whereas everywhere you go for USAM, it is feels like US Open because the USGA puts it on. Like that's how it feels. So it is big. There's a ton of people. I played well my first one, and I mean we have thousands of people watching one group because it's match play. It's what you would have seen obviously this week. It's what we've typically seen before, and it's super exciting. And as an 18-year-old, it is jarring because it's still the USAM is still put on nicer than I would say almost every PGA Tour event minus the US Open and the PGA and the I'm assuming the Masters and the Open. Like the USGA treats it like a US Open. It's just for people who are amateurs. So it lives up to the hype. It is a wild experience, your first one, but all of them, just because let's just say even if you played, you know, a few of them, you wait all year, you play college events that feel big that aren't. I mean, the national championship doesn't feel like anything. You know, there's if a lot of people don't come out, you wouldn't even notice much of a difference. And then you go play summer tournaments and it's like, oh, this one's big. Sonny Hanna is huge, blah, blah, blah. And then you all of a sudden you get to, you know, USAM and you're like, what the hell, man? Like, you know, where's Tiger at? Like, this is a major. Right. So it's awesome. And it obviously makes you more nervous, but everybody, you know, wants to win the USAM probably more than anything. It's the only amateur event that changes your life. You know, the national championship doesn't really do a lot for you. It adds to your resume for sure, but you don't get anything. And I would say that it's definitely more of like a talking point more so than it is like any career booster. But you win that USAM, you obviously get to play the majors, you went play the Masters, but you're making like a, you know, maybe two commas coming out of college now. You're going to get paid. So that's a big thing. And, you know, most college kids are looking for that sponsorship, something or other, if that, you know, especially if it's their senior year, because you're about to, you know, go play Q school typically, which is going to cost you, you know, all in all, like, you know, 10 to 15 grand to just give that a shot. So, you know, winning that, making some money, you know, pretty much guaranteed, is, you know, a big deal. And that's all because the USAM has that kind of, reputation that, you know, the people that win it are studs, and it's the biggest amateur event in the world for a good reason.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, beside all the stuff you and I are just having fun with, I thought it was an awesome watch. I mean, obviously we were going to be there, and I was fired up to call it, and I was excited to, first of all, I was excited to be there because I knew I was going to be playing golf with Faxon, like basically from sunup to sundown when we weren't in the booth. And I'm sure the NBC crew did that as well. But just being able to be at home and watch it on TV, I thought it was a great championship match. You mentioned kind of all the birdies and eagles and all the stuff that was going back and forth. I thought the last five holes were a great encapsulation of amateur golf versus pro. You saw some unbelievable golf shots. You saw some horrendous golf shots. I mean, that is, again, there's a little bit of a difference, Max, from the PGA Tour to playing best amateur golf in the world. I mean, I know that number, that line is getting smaller and smaller considering how great these players are when they get on tour, and or at least a few of them. I mean, obviously, we just saw what Colin Morikawa does, but I thought it was awesome. I did want to talk to you a little bit about the caddy situation. I was lucky enough to get Segundo on the Clubhouse. If you haven't listened to that, or you don't listen to my other podcast, the Clubhouse with Shane Bacon, Segundo Olivo Pinto came on. He was the young man that I had the unfortunate situation with the caddy on the 18th hole at Bandon against Tyler Strafossi, the guy that ended up winning the amateur, where the caddy was basically building sandcastles in the bunker there at 18. Were you watching that live? Did you see what was going on?
I did not watch that part live. I want to just cut in on what you said though, really quick. These kids are amazing, like absolutely amazing. And But there is a line still between the professional level and the amateur level. And this is what I love about golf is that those two kids, let's just say, just use only them two, but I'm sure tons more are going to be the, you know, studs of the PGA Tour at some point, you would think. And even if they're not, it's somebody that you watch this week will be. What I love about golf is you're going to watch them get better and you're not going to see a huge jump because they're already really good, but you're going to see them get better. And I know that lag putting is really, really hard at Bandon. It looks really, really hard, but that was a very clear weakness they both had. Or they all kind of had for the week. You're going to see short game. You see some great shots, but short game, obviously that stuff improves. And most of it isn't like the big stuff, like the hitting, because the nerves come into play. The experience comes into play when you get on the greens, when you get around the greens, when you're laying up like Gupta was, you know, you just, dude, you got to get that ball out of the bunker. I don't care if you fat,
right.
That ball has to get out of the bunker. But those are the little things you would see where when you watch the Wyndham, I know the Wyndham, the course was different and it looked like, you know, obviously softer and all these things, but you watch the little things PGA Tour players do, it's amazing. The lag putting to me, you know, when you watch professionals is so impressive because it's such a throwaway thing. I was kind of thinking about it recently. It feels a little bit more like a free throw in you know, the NBA. You don't see a lot of pros three putt a lot. And you're seeing, you know, I'm watching Strafacci play Gupta and he's three up and he's got like 25 feet and leaves it 4 or 5 feet short and misses the putt. And I'm not saying I've never done that. I'm not saying people don't do that all the time, but I'm saying that happened a lot more than just once. And there weren't a lot of just like, here, let me kick this in. And that's what I love about the golf is you're going to see him and get better at that. Like that's the stuff that you see the pros already have because of all the experience of being nervous and the experience of adapting to the greens, whatever. But I just want to point that out because I think that's something fun to watch as these players grow into like incredible careers. The caddy thing.
Well, one sec, Max. I did just to your point, because one of my favorite follows that I have, Shosh, to your point, sent this yesterday, and I just wanted to read it because I think it backs up and it holds the hand of what you just said. It said, random potential thought, biggest difference between the pros and the top collegiate players, course management and shot variety. It said, most PGA Tour courses don't magnify those differences potentially, but Bandon right now, the differences are magnified, and you see tour pros not having difficulty with those types of things. I noticed that a lot, Max, watching this with, you know, the most famous hole on property is 16. You know, it's a potentially drivable par four depending on where the wind is. But I just felt like a lot of the time there seemed to be not 100% committed idea of exactly where to go. Now, it's also a hard hole to play with a layup or if you're going for the green. But I did just feel like a lot of the time, like if you were playing in a tour event there, you and Joe would 100% know what you were doing
on that hole.
You stepped on the tee. And I felt like a lot of the time it was like, I'm going to hit driver. Am I really going at the green? Am I bailing out left? Left's kind of dead. Every time guys would kind of go for it, it seemed like it was not the right play. Because again, when it's firm and fast and it's linksy, I mean, you're basically at the expense of what the ground's going to do to the golf ball. So you've got to hit a golf shot, sure. But then it might run 60 or 70 yards. You have to understand that that's potentially what could happen. So
yeah,
I do feel like the course management, I thought a little bit, and especially in those later matches you saw, because of this golf course being so different than what a typical USGA championship, you know, PGA Tour event, LPGA Tour event, whatever, because it's so different, I felt like that's one of the most important parts of how you plan out your round is exactly what the shots you're going to hit are.
Totally. And then also to that exact point, I just remember Bones on one of the holes, I think in the semifinal match, you know, bet somebody, you know, I bet you a lemonade this ball's left of the pin because I think, yeah, Strafacci, because I think Gupta hit it in the right low area. And you know, Bones is on the ground, said, oh, you know, I bet you a lemonade this ball's left of the pin here because you have forever left and right looked really bad. And the ball goes right. And I thought that was a very telling. Bones has done a lot more professional golf stuff than amateur golf because that's just another thing that kid will get better at. But you just, you know, knowing your golf swing, you know, knowing your tendencies and knowing how to make sure a golf ball never goes right when you have the world left on that exact hole. And, you know, they ends up making bogey. Gupta ends up making bogey too. But like, those are the things you look at them. That's why match play, there's it's kind of more fun and easy not to like, you know, jump on people when you watch their rounds because you're like, oh, you know, oh, they tied. Like he didn't lose a whole way. It's like, yeah, but he just made like a bogey from the middle of the fairway when, you know, he had like you just can't, like you just can't do that. So at the end of the day, you look at these scores and it's, you know, you don't really think about the score as much as you think about what happened. But again, this is nothing on the guys. I'm saying this is the exciting part about watching amateurs and then pros and seeing where the differences are and then seeing where people get better. You look at someone like a Colin Morikawa, a Matt Wolf, a Victor Hovland, a Scotty Scheffler, these kids who have jumped on the scene and been so good right away. It's not always just because they hit it so well all the time. It's because they're polished. Like you look at Colin. Colin is an unbelievable ball striker, like bordering on once in a generation ball striker. He's way, way up there. Yet he wins at the PGA Championship because he, you know, one big part was he chipped in. You know, that's not something he's known for, but he's really good at it because he's good at everything. Matt Wolf is known for smashing it and hitting it super flush. Matt Wolf is an amazing putter. He hasn't had the best year this year statistically, but he's an amazing putter typically. Victor Hovland.
Max wins his first PGA Tour event by making a bomb for eagle, right?
Exactly.
I mean, off the green.
And then Victor Hovland, who is, you know, admittedly to, you know, or self-admittedly a poor chipper. I'm sorry to the guy on Twitter still. I don't know if he's been working on it. I would assume so still. But, you know, he's chipped in a few times this year. I know he's had some bad ones, but like these people are very polished. And Scottie Scheffler, who, you know, I haven't seen play a lot of golf. He hasn't been on TV a ton. I watch him at the PGA and he looks sharp. So that's the stuff. These young guys, they're probably just as good in general as the young guys who are killing it on the PGA Tour, but it's just the little sharp stuff that's just like a little off. The okay, I'm not making a bogey here. It's the old professional golf saying. It takes a professional one good shot. They can hit three bad shots and still make par,
right?
Because their bad is so good, and really their one good is so good. Whereas you know the typical amateur, if you hit one poor shot, if you hit a bad drive, typically it's a bogey. So that's the professional golf thing. That's what you see the most at the PGA Tour level. But it's also why watching the USAM is typically the most fun thing to watch because you're seeing a little bit more raw golf. You're seeing just as high at the talent level, but maybe the tools haven't been sharpened a ton. And that's why I love watching it. And this week, obviously, because the golf course is something that I've only heard of from just about everybody in the world. And I had never actually seen before.
I've been to it before. Yeah.
The caddy thing though. I don't know if people are going to love my take on this.
It's okay.
Your podcast on the Clubhouse Pod was awesome. I think the kid, Silvio, he deserves
Segundo.
He deserves all the credit in the world. I mean that I would have never handled that well. I don't know if anybody would have ever handled it that well. Where I got a little bit, and this is maybe where my take won't be the most popular. What I got a little bit annoyed with is just not from Segundo, but from other people. Like, ugh, like I feel for this caddy. I texted you that. Like I feel for this caddy. This is so difficult. He's going to get berated on Twitter, which is, I mean, again, I know this better than anybody at this point. You could just not go on Twitter. Like if that's what you're afraid of. He, I don't know what the fuck he was doing. Like,
right.
That is rule one of caddying. I caddied in high school. I knew a lot about golf, but I knew that there was two things I never do. And it's touch the ball and touch the sand. Like don't touch it if it's on the ground. And then he lied about it. I don't get like the gosh, I feel bad for him because I've been thinking about this and I'm not saying he did this at all. I'm not saying he did this at all. But in this day and age with the gambling on sports, DraftKings and all that, I don't know if there were even lines for this event. So again,
I don't think they do the amateur.
But I'm saying in general, with how popular gambling's gotten, that caddy was getting paid $0. Like, I mean, he's getting paid a little bit amount of money from his player, not a lot. What if somebody came in and said, hey, I'll give you 10 grand if you can somehow throw this match, if you could somehow do it? Because that's what it looked like to my eyes. And that's just what made me think about it was, I don't know anyone who's ever touched the sand. Aaron Fleener said it best. What would I even tell my player after I touch the sand?
That's what There's I was nothing. Wondering.
And the reason I bring that point up about the gambling is there has to be a new rule done about these events that demand a caddy or mandate a caddy when you're an AM and you obviously don't have a pro caddy, because we've all been there in professional golf. I've played Monday qualifiers. I played with Rudy in the Bahamas. I've played amateur events where we were mandated caddies. Like I hated it because I have to teach typically a kid who doesn't play golf or ever go around it, that, or who's ever been around it, that, hey, you, this is where you can't be. This is where you can't stand. This is a penalty. Don't touch this. Don't do that.
It's a new stress. It's another stress you have to deal with.
And it's not even just a stress. If he does it, I lose.
Like, right.
My career, my like livelihood, especially if it's a professional golf event, is at a really bad spot because of this guy who I have am forced to use as a caddy. I have to have him caddy. Now my whole thing is my whole week, my whole job is up, you know, or kind of at the mercy of him. So that's what I'm watching with this. Do I think that that guy did that on purpose? No, I do not. But there should be an appeals thing, like, yo, man, like, this isn't my caddy. Like, I, you know, how lucky was it, you know, back in the day, Justin Thomas had Michael Greller caddy for him at US Amps. I had my dad. I had to teach him the rules every time because what if there's a new rule change? He isn't not used to this. Not that Greller was, honestly, either, but you get my point. He's being paid to be a caddy. These guys are you know, local caddies who, you know, are out there having fun. It's an awesome week for them. But like, this kid should not have lost that match because a guy he does not know at all, he met this week because he told him he's a local caddy. He does one of the dumbest things I've ever seen in my life. Now that kid could have won the USAM. I don't know. I hate that you can't appeal that.
Yeah. So to your, I mean, I have never thought about this, and I think it's actually a brilliant point is, you know, professionally, Max, you're responsible for Joe. Now, I mean, Joe's an adult. I mean, there's no reason for me to say that he's not responsible for himself.
Yeah, but I'm the CEO and he's an employee. That's how this thing works.
Exactly.
So my employee is a jagoff. He's, you know, it's on me.
Then it's on you, though. You know, like you're paying your caddy as a professional golfer and you're paying him to be an employee, be a good employee, know what the hell's going on, and to do the right stuff, right? And if he doesn't do it, if it's Ian Woosnam and you got 15 clubs in the bag and you're on the second hole at the Open Championship, and you know what? That's on you as a team because you guys are a professional team. But for an amateur to play in a U.S. amateur and to take a local caddy, which happens at every amateur event, there are fathers on the bag. We saw that this week, maybe a little too much. There are friends on the bag. I mean, something that I always saw in the amateur events we would do was a guy might have a local caddy on through the quarterfinals, a friend of his on his team loses, the friend comes in and loops for the semifinals and the finals, right? That happens as well. And again, that friend is a collegiate golfer that knows the rules. To your point, this guy, who now we know a little bit more information about, is a first-year caddy at Bandon Dunes. He's a resort caddy. He caddies for guys like me, Max. He doesn't caddy for guys like you professionally. He's caddying for me and three of my idiot friends carrying a bag of beers, trying to have a good time. So for him, maybe testing the sand is something he just kind of does. It's a little bit like kicking a ball out of a bad lie, right? If you're caddying for the recreational golfer that's out there trying to have some fun, it maybe in this circumstance shouldn't be on a player who is maybe assigned somebody to carry his bag because he doesn't want to carry his bag the whole time because it'd be a lot and it would be, you know, exhausting. You're playing 36 a day three times. Maybe it shouldn't, like you said, maybe it shouldn't fall on the player. I mean, if your caddy screws up and the caddy isn't your caddy, I don't know how you would make that a rule, but I do love the idea that we are penalizing a player for something that a guy he doesn't really know and has no professional affiliation with is ruining his chances at what you said, which I loved, was a two-comma deal. I mean, you know, you're talking about potentially costing a guy maybe $1 million when he turns professional if this all happens the way, and I don't want to pile on the caddy. I mean, we've all heard everybody's take on it, but I do love the bigger picture look that you have in that in these types of events, which are way bigger than maybe people know they are, we should maybe allow some leniency to the player if something happens outside of his control.
Yeah, exactly. There should be some appeal. There should be some, you know, we always talk about it, but there should be like the common sense test. You know, did Dustin Johnson really move his ball at Oakmont? You know, honestly, probably not. But even if he did, it went backwards, if anything. So it didn't help at all. Like the guy touched the sand did absolutely nothing for the player. And it also had the player, it's not like he was trying to condone it at all. He wasn't asking. No one would ask for that. So it's just unfair to the player. I'll go back to this, the unpopular part. I don't feel bad for this caddy one iota. I don't. If you say, oh, well, he's just a local caddy, well, then he shouldn't be caddying in the USAM. The kid should have had a, you know, he should have had an option to get, you know, a better caddy or something if we're going to have the biggest event in the world for amateur golf. So I don't feel bad. I feel really bad for the kid. It's not like he knows any of that's going to happen. So that sucks that he can't say, hey, listen, can we just go back and talk about this? Like, this is a huge moment. I want to appeal this. Like, it's not my penalty. It's this guy's penalty. Like, I should not be crushed because of this. The kid handled it amazing. It is so impressive. It was really hard to watch that, knowing that I've had that situation where, I mean, I joke about it all the time, but when Rudy caddied for me in the Bahamas, like, it was very difficult. And I'm not even just like, I'm with you too, with like the added stress. Like, do I need that? No, but I was just more like, what if he stands behind me? I made the cut on the number that week and ended up playing great on the weekend. If he stands behind me on one of those holes where he's not allowed to, and I get a penalty, I miss the cut. And that, at that point, that was a humongous moment in my life. Like, I finally played a good event and I made the cut on the number. Like, Rudy could have like messed that up. Now, shout out to him. Like, he was great and didn't do anything like wrong, you know, as far as the rules go. But I was, that's why I was scared of it. And there's nothing I can do about that. You also see these local caddies in these things. You saw how hyped some of these caddies got when someone made a putt. There's a video of, you know, the kid makes a putt, gives a little fist pump, and the caddy in the background is a local banding caddy, is fist pumping and waving the flag around, like just doing all the stuff. And it's fun to see and it's exciting. You know what that makes me think in a kind of a skeptic and maybe a pessimistic way? I am not sure that caddy, if he's forecaddying, isn't kicking a ball into a better lie, because he seems like he really wants it. And he doesn't, you know, there's no, like you said, I'm not his boss. I'm his boss for the week. If I never see him again, I mean, you never, like, that, why would I see him again? So it's like, you, that stuff makes me nervous. Like, these people are, especially the, you know, on the PGA Tour, no caddy would ever, or I don't think any caddy would ever do that. And one big reason is because, you know, if it's 1 week, you're making a ton of money in your life. Like, even the caddies are doing, you know, well enough not to be thinking about cheating, I would assume. But you go play a low level professional golf event, even, you know, a web event where your card is on the line, and somebody, that stuff makes me very nervous. And so when I see these caddies getting hyped that are local caddies that probably have bragging rights with their buddies, and you know, what's the worst thing that can happen if you know, a random person cheated? They just get, maybe they get banned from USGA events. That probably wasn't ever going to happen again. So like, that stuff is what I think of in my skeptic view of it. So it makes me nervous. So like, that's why I just don't get why there's not some sort of appeal where it's like, hey, I don't know this guy. He's an awesome guy. You know, they obviously get along, and that's great, but I don't know this guy. I don't know what the hell he was doing. I'm losing this whole thing because I was forced to have a caddy.
And it didn't help. The thing is,
yeah, it didn't help him at all.
Sucks is it didn't help him. Now, I do want to throw this at you, because I'm listening to you and I'm agreeing with a lot of what you're saying. I've always thought that golf could really use, you know, Bill Simmons always talked about the sports czar that could just kind of be around and help out with weird situations that seem like they're probably simpler than we make them out to be. In a 144 field stroke play event, if a rules infraction happens on 7 and you are either off the golf course or on 14, you can't really have an opinion on it. You could watch video. Maybe you see a close-up on an HD camera or whatever. But in those instances, to me, the rules of golf have to kind of be what you lean on. You know, I mean, it's what's written. But in match play, Max, in match play, the only people affected are the two players playing against each other, right? That's the only thing that matters. I mean, you can make a 10 and somebody can make a 2 and it's a one-up lead. You're playing one-on-one, mano-a-mano, that's it. So why don't we have some sort of an umbrella clause about common sense where you go, hey, Tyler, you're here. Let me just explain to you what happened. Now, I know Tyler wants to win. And listen, you can say everything you want to say, but winning is the most important. And if somebody comes up to you and go, the caddy rubbed the sand, it's a loss of hole, you win the match, you're like, that stinks, but I won, I'm moving on. You know what? I'm one step closer to winning the Havemeyer Trophy. But if you did have a common sense, you know, conversation about it and go, hey, this caddy touched the sand, it's obviously not going to help the player, you're a golfer, you're here, you maybe saw a little bit of what went down, we're going to eject the caddy, but let's keep the match going, I feel like reasonable parties could all agree that would be something that would make sense, right? You know what, I agree,
in match play, if you tee off in front of the tee marker, so in to your exact point in stroke play, if you tee off in front of the tee marker, it's 2-stroke penalty.
Boom.
Always. If you in match play tee off in front of the tee marker, it's either no penalty or your playing partner can make you hit it again.
Right.
That's how, at least I think that's how the rule is written. I'm pretty sure. So there's your thing. It doesn't affect anyone else except the guy he's playing. If the guy he's playing has no problem with it, he shanks it. He's like, screw it. You play that one. And he hits it to a foot. You'd be like, nope, hit it again. You teed off in front. Like, but it only goes on between them two. It's my biggest beef with the Sergio Matt Kuchar thing from last year's match play. You know, Sergio raked a putt. Did he mess up? 100%. Matt Kuchar can totally be like, screw you, dude. Like, you should have waited. But in general, you know, I think Matt knows that, you know, he was going to give him the putt. He could have just said, listen, rules official, like, I don't care that he did it. Let's just call it whatever, because it doesn't affect anybody else. That's a great point. You should, in the matches, you should have all the say in the world about what actually happens with the rules. So on that
you're
one,
the rules Strafaggi official.
Could say, yeah, the Strafaggi could be like, yo, listen, dude, I don't care. Like, just play it. Yeah. I mean, we'll see what happens at the end about with the caddy, but he wasn't trying to do anything malicious in you know, Strafaggi's opinion, let's say. So he's like, screw it. And then if Strafaggi wants to, be like, you know what, dude, beat it. Like,
it's the rule.
Yeah.
Right. I can win the match that way too.
It's a win-win for him. It should be more on him than, yeah, for sure in match play. But yeah, in stroke play, obviously all this stuff affects everybody in the event. I don't care if you're in, you know, last place, you still, you know, maybe are one closer to not last place if somebody, you know, you have to judge all the rules the exact same. So I love that. I think it's very unfair that you know, when you turn pro and you're on the web or PGA tour, you obviously have the tools to find a caddy who you like, maybe not your favorite in the world, but you will find somebody, you know, that is a professional, like that is what is available to you. But when you're on these low level, you know, maybe a mini tour event that maybe you need a caddy. I know the Canadian tour, you need one for the weekend. And then, or you're in a high level amateur event where you need a caddy. It's like, why are my shots being dictated by somebody that I am forced to use who I don't know? Like it seems so ridiculous. I know that we're trying to look professional here, but like that caddy clearly didn't know what he was doing. It sucks that someone who clearly did know what he was doing got penalized for it all. And I don't know, it put a bad taste in my mouth. But by the way, with this whole thing that morning, I was watching or thinking about the golf, and I was reading about the golf, and I remember people always say that Bandon Dunes has the best local caddies. And I wrote this down, because it just made me laugh, and it just somehow ends up coinciding with this, like, this thing that happens later, this controversy. And this is coming from someone, like I said, I used to caddy in high school, so like I hated.
I mean, you caddied for me. I tipped you well, A+. You
did.
Every time.
You did. I got free tacos after. But I one of my the sayings I that makes me laugh so hard is when people are like, "Oh, Bandon." I'm just picking on Bandon, but it could be anywhere. Oh, they have the best caddies. They read the greens so well. It's like, dude, you're 12 handicap. How in God's name do you know if they read the greens well? Because you made a lot of putts that day, because you don't start a putt where you look at all. So you could argue that they actually read them really, really bad, but your putt's just going. I hate when people say that, because I hear that about Bandon. Oh, they're best local caddies. Like, you are having the best week of your life if you're at Bandon, from what I read. That's not even a judgment call anymore. That is a fact, because everybody mentions it 1 million times that they went there. So it's one of the best weeks of their lives. Of course it's fun. Of course you love who you're with. Of course the caddies seem awesome. But stop saying that they read the greens so well there. It's like, you have no idea. You are not good enough to tell me that your ball started online and that read was right. I'm sorry. I know that, but see, the only reason that this caddy attaches the same thing really ruined this take is I'm not being serious about this. You can say whatever you want. But like, that was my funny takeaway from this Bandon thing before all this happened, was, you know, everyone talks about how amazing their caddy was at Bandon. It's like, okay, so you made a 40 footer. Like, yeah, he's a really good.
You know what? When we go, I'm going to have Ethan caddy for you and I, who's my Bandon caddy, who's awesome. And I'm going to tell him.
Imagine having a Bandon caddy.
I'm going to tell him to just give you the absolute shittiest reads.
Well, you know what I do, like, Shane? You know what I do at golf courses? I read it myself. You know why? Because I'm really good at reading greens. You know why? Because I'm on the PGA tour. Like, that's the thing, is I've listened to these caddies say like the wrong read, and it's okay. But I'm not saying I read them all perfect, but it's just like, oh, you'll never believe, like, this guy just knows the place. It's like, yeah, I kind of know it already. I could see the break. Like, I do this all the time. Yeah. But there are some that are amazing. I remember I had a caddy at Riviera once. We were playing and, you know, you hear, oh, you got to take, they always say this, you got to take this guy. If you know, if you end up playing Riviera, this year's like, I'm going to just take my caddy.
Right.
Like, but this was the one guy, the one guy I've ever played with. I had a putt that I thought was two cups out the right. And he came over and he said it perfectly. He said, I know you think this breaks more. It doesn't. It is a ball out the right. And I'm like, there's no way, dude. Like, this putt feels like in my feet, everything, it feels like it's gonna go. And I was like, you know what, I'm gonna listen. And I listened, and as I hit the putt, I'm like, it's gonna miss so far left, and it went right in the middle. And I, that was the one time I thought to myself, I'm like, I might kick Joe to the curb for one week, because this guy seems like a genius.
He knows these greens like the back of his hand. All in all, good week. Bannon was fun. I had a question.
Oh, it was awesome.
There was also a PGA Tour event that happened.
Wait, I forgot my one last take. I hate to admit this. I stopped watching with like 5-6 holes ago. I couldn't take how slow it was, man.
Yeah, Strafossi was brutal.
Yeah, it was masked by, I think I watched the other days for the most part, especially semifinals. I watched a lot, and it was masked by how there was two groups, you know, so like they could cut in and out of each group. But that last match felt like it never ended and it was never going to end. And I couldn't do it. And I'm sorry. I know that is a lame excuse, but I watch enough golf. I couldn't watch it anymore. It drove me insane. And I get why people don't like slow play too, but that was, I felt like it leaving a little bit more brutal just because there was one group on the whole golf course. And I hate, Bones is such a pro, but every time he said deliver, I'm like, Bones, you want to smack this kid? Because delivered is just the nicest way to say super slow. Slow. Yeah.
Now, I will say, shout out to Ollie Osborne, because he was faster than hell. And he would do the DJ thing occasionally where he was hitting and you could tell the camera still wasn't ready. You know, like he was about to pull the trigger and you're like, oh, he's not ready.
We're going to take a quick break and be right back.
There was a PGA Tour event this week. I know we're not going to touch a lot on it. I did have a question I wrote down that I wanted to ask you. Have you ever played with Peter Malnati before?
Oh, yeah. I've played with Peter.
Okay. He's sponsored by Kind Bars. So two questions. One is, does he eat Kind Bars during the round, and does he have a lot in the bag and offer them to his playing partners? Because I feel like that'd be a nice thing to do. Nice.
He does. He has a ton, and he offered it. I think it was the first time I ever had a Kind Bar. He gave me one. I really did like it. But Peter is the best. It is perfect that he's sponsored by something called Kind, because he might be the nicest person I've ever met. And yeah, and he hands out bars like they're, you know, candy, which they taste pretty good.
I mean, so I know we have the gift card bag that obviously has fallen flat considering no fans, but the Kind Bar thing just seems like if you could get sponsored by a snack that's a wrappable snack, seems like a great thing to have on the golf course, because all you're going to be doing is handing them out to anybody that wants one, right? I mean, volunteer.
Yeah.
You want a bar? What are you looking for? You want coconut? I got the coconut. It'll be good to go.
You once again are doing your thing where you think the caddy will be down to carry like 75 bars. So I don't know if everyone's getting a bar, but yeah, maybe like three extras.
Okay. Hey, Joe, the golf balls are in that pocket and all my Kind Bars are in that pocket. Just want to let you know. That's all of our snacks for us and everybody else that asked for it. But
Shane, did you watch the Wyndham?
I watched a good amount of it. You know what? I watched on Sunday, Max. I wrote this on Twitter, and I wasn't joking. And of course, you know, Twitter, you and I have had the lengthy conversations about Twitter over the last few months. I think pandemic has helped expand the horribleness of everything that is social media. But you literally cannot write something on Twitter and not get clapped back. I mean, I could write, man, water's great. And there would be like 50 people to be like, what kind of water? Do you filter your water? What kind of, you know, electrolytes? And I watched golf from about 5 a.m. on Sunday until, I mean, 7 p.m. pretty much nonstop. And of course, I got a lot of like, wow, your wife must be happy. I'm like, I watched my child for 4 of those hours with my wife not at the house. So it's not like, I wasn't just like, I don't duct tape myself to the couch and not move, you know? I mean, I'm also doing other stuff, but dude, I watched an unbelievable amount of golf on Sunday.
Well, Shane, you were, speaking of Twitter, you were on fire on Twitter, I feel like, in the last 2 days. You were in your element. It was at
I've been abandoned.
Course.
I've been abandoned.
Of course.
I've been abandoned once or twice.
You were on fire. You crushed it. I watched probably more of the Wyndham. I was curious how it ends. It's exciting, you know, with the 125 and, you know, even like the 70, and then watching someone like Jim Herman, who I really like. And, you know, it was exciting watching him come down the stretch. The golf course, obviously, Not as exciting considering how soft it was and the scores were really low, but it still, I thought, exciting to watch. Jim Herman, as I wrote down, the guy is, this is what I wrote. I don't want to mess up how I wrote it because I don't want to come off mean. It might still, whatever. Jim Herman is the least likely assassin of all time. Like, he is the guy who helps you change your oil in your super hoity-toity suburban neighborhood right before he kills a bad guy, like, out, you know, when he's on the lam or whatever they say. Like, Jim Herman has now won as many times as Patrick Cantlay and Tony Finau combined. He has, this was his second top 25 in the last 2 years. They've both been wins. The guy gets near the lead and absolutely, like, close. He's just a closer. He's I know Lowling Up does my favorite thing, the dogs and killers, or neither. He's a killer. I don't even think he's a dog, which I thought you had to be both. He's just a straight up killer. The guy just knows how to win. I don't get it. When he plays well, he plays amazing. I've always thought that Jim was a bit, he mentioned it in his post round that everything for him is mental. And I agree. The times I play with Jim, he's played amazing. So maybe I just have like that, you know, that memory of it. But you know, you wouldn't watch him. When I watch him, I wouldn't think, oh, this is somebody who's going to make seven cuts this year. And you know, kind of struggle all season. Cause he always seems so like locked in. He's rolled it well with me. He always drives it great, but man, like, it's hard to win. I talk about it all the time, and this guy makes it look really easy. When he's down in the hunt at the end of the tournament, he was nails making the putts he needed to, hitting shots close. I mean,
every iron shot was right.
Every iron shot, and
five irons. It's not wedges.
He had no nerves. It looked like on that putt on 18, it rolled so perfect. He just misread it. But what an amazing tournament! I will say though, and this is what I wrote about the week. I thought that this week, for the first time, I don't think that it's helped any other week, but for the first time, I thought that this week at Wyndham, not having fans was painful. Like, it's obviously already not the most exciting event just because you don't have Colin Morikawa battling Justin Thomas. You know, you didn't have that for once, which, again, I like seeing that here and there. You know, you need to see Jim Herman, the guy who isn't on TV a lot, like, get his play. Even Billy Horschel is an amazing player who isn't on TV a lot. We get to watch him play and you get to see how good he is. But the shot on 18 that Jim hit and that Billy Horschel hit were so good. And I don't know, you know, I was thinking about this kind of all the whole time I was watching. I don't know, as much as we bag on commentators at times, I don't know what they're supposed to do to liven that up. You can't go insane. It's a lot easier to go insane when other people are cheering. But I just felt like Jim Herman hits it. I'm not going to say the shot of his life. He's had, you know, he chipped in at Houston to basically close it out, but it was one of the best shots of his life on 18. And it just was like, oh, and what a great shot by Jim. It's like, I needed fans at that moment. I needed someone to go bananas, right? Because I was like, oh my God, that's an amazing shot. It's just like, that was the first week where I felt like fans really liked him. Not having fans really diminished.
Five iron. So like, okay.
That shot's hard.
I consider myself a pretty good golfer, Max. I mean, obviously I'm not a professional golfer.
Hey, I would consider that as well.
I mean, that's fair to say, right? I mean, yeah. I'm a plus handicap. I don't
have
talk
a plus
about,
in front of your
I don't
handicap,
talk about yeah. my golf game a lot because I mean, I do a podcast with a guy that plays on the PGA Tour. But I am amazed week in and week out watching professional golf, especially coming down the hunt, at the shots that guys hit with their irons and how precise the shots are. And you have Jim Herman hitting a five iron into the last hole to 12 feet. And then Billy Horschel comes up after him and has to make birdie to win. And it's a seven iron from somewhere in the 190 yard range. I mean, hits Max, like, if I hit that shot with an iron, a seven iron from 190, if I hit it that close, it would have been the shot of my day. By far, not even close. Yeah. It would have been the absolute best iron shot of the day. If I'd have hit it, all my buddies would have been like, holy crap, wow, what a shot. You know, it is so impressive how good and how precise PGA Tour players, including yourself, obviously, are with their irons, and they do it week in and week out coming down the stretch. And those two shots were great. I wanted to throw this at you. I'd say I am acquaintances with Billy Horschel. I've had him on the podcast. I text him occasionally. I know you play out there with him. He's between hat deals right now. Do you think we could get him a get a grip hat and he'll wear it during a tournament event round? Because he's wearing any hat, you know?
I mean, this is just playful, obviously, but Billy does look like the guy who would wear the Pine Valley hat of, you know, like something a little bit
maybe
more
nicer.
What? Yeah. Nicer. Right, I mean, I love our hats, but doesn't he give you that vibe? Yeah. He's won a FedEx Cup. I feel like he's going to wear, he wears the Polo RLX. His sleeves were tighter than any sleeves I've ever seen.
His arms are sculpted, dude. I mean,
yeah,
he's
so
like
he's
Cabrera
Bayo,
you know?
Yeah, he's in some good shape. So to me, he's somebody who's going to wear, he's not going to go the Duffner route where he wears, you know, hilarious
dude wipes hats.
He's going to wear very classy.
I'm going to send him a picture. I'm going to say, hey, man, listen.
Let it rip.
You know what? If you're down for it, we'd appreciate it. You know what? If it's a Wednesday hat, that's okay as well. We are happy to be a Pro-Am hat. That's fine with us. We don't
need to be Thursday. My locker's next to his. I could just start sneaking him in there and just maybe he'll think that, like, that's his new sponsor. I'll write a little note. Hey, this is from your agent. Insert name here. We need to start wearing these hats, especially when we're in the hunt on Sundays.
You make it a Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday hat, and they're just all the same white Imperial
same,
hats that we
yeah.
have. I was thinking about that. I'm gonna throw it his way. But
I like it.
Yeah, the Herman guy wins it. Before we get to flights, just quickly, we occasionally talk about other sports. NBA has been back, and it's been amazing. I've watched a lot of NBA. Where are you currently in confidence level of your Lakers winning this championship as the NBA playoffs start on Monday?
Super high, because for all my life watching LeBron James play and Tom Brady for that matter, and the Patriots, right before the playoffs, every single time, there comes out this like article or new take that, oh man, you know, LeBron, the Lakers
struggling,
don't look very good. They're struggling. And then you know what they do? They win every time, at least the Patriots, every time somebody says that. So I love that they're saying that. You know when all that started, that the Lakers don't look that sharp? When they clinched number one and started not playing the same way. They started posting up, as I think Stamler said, they started posting up AD for the first time ever. They weren't running the two together a lot. Like all of a sudden they start playing a different type of basketball. Oh my God, they're not winning. They stink. It's like they're not even they already have the one seed. They're just trying not to get hurt and whatever. So I love it. It's the perfect position. So I am very, very confident. I love the takes that the Blazers are going to, they're hot. They're going to run through the Lakers. Like the Blazers haven't had a blowout win yet. Like they win every game by two. Is Dame Lillard maybe my favorite athlete ever? Yeah, he's up there. Like I love watching him, but this happens every year. Who in God's name is going to guard LeBron James and Anthony Davis on the Blazers? Who the hell is going to guard them? Like there's nothing to be done about that. So I'm very confident. You asked me who I thought was going to get bounced in the first round or maybe be
an upset.
I think it's going to be the Clippers. And this is going to be a really biased take, but the Clippers are losers. Like losers lose and winners win. They're going to lose.
you know what? We need to start recording in the morning more. I love you. You're fiery takes in the morning. You are just throwing them out there.
Who do you got?
Funny. I was looking at the odds on, I told you I wanted you to throw me your championship teams, your pick to win the championship, and then maybe a first round upset. The first round upsets are tough because you have 76ers Celtics. I think 76ers would have been a fun pick if everybody was healthy. Obviously, that not being the case. Dude, I had the Mavericks on there as well. Now,
yeah,
I mean, they're not going to be. I mean, it is a horrible matchup for Dallas because they've got, you know, some of the best defenders in the league and they can throw themselves at Luka. But it's plus 450 Dallas to win the series.
Yeah.
It's a big number. But I'm looking a little bit down. I love Heat Pacers. I think the Heat are going to roll. I think that's an easy one. But, you know, the Thunder, now it's a little bit of a tighter number if you're looking at the Vegas numbers. But Thunder Rockets, I just feel like Houston was like, really? This is the team we have to play?
Yeah, it
this
was scrappy the worst situation.
Oklahoma City team with CP3 who's going to like be out for blood. Not sure there's a player in all of sports that wants to like step on throats more than CP3.
Yeah.
So I think that's my upset pick. I think I'm going to go Thunder over the Rockets. I'm with you. I mean, I financially would love to see the Trailblazers pull off the upset. I think it's going to be a sweep. I mean, maybe Dame gets one because he's Dame, and I'm with you. He's one of my favorite athletes.
We talk about, like, so many people are like, God, there's no defense in the NBA anymore. Like, I just want to see defense. And then somehow we get blinded to the Blazers being like, oh, I love the Blazers. They're so fun to watch. Like, you know what? The Blazers are horrible on defense. Like,
terrible
they don't
defensive
guard
team.
anybody, and that's okay. Do I love watching them? For sure. But you, again, you can't play both sides of this. Like, yeah, they're fun as hell to watch because all their games get on the wire because they don't have anybody to stop anybody on defense. It's just, can Dame and CJ go off at the end? I was so stoked to see Carmelo bury that three. I love him. I'm gonna start doing, I've always wanted to do the three thing. Ooh. On the side of the head if I make a putt.
Well, no, it's gotta be for a, it's gotta be for life. A three, like it's gotta or be for an eagle on a par five or birdie.
I might just
on a par
start
four.
Doing it on my third shots. Every third shot I hit, I might just start doing this, whether it goes in or not. But so I love watching, but yeah, I'm not like scared of the Blazers. I really do think the Lakers are going to make it to the championship. Hopefully win. The only team I am super nervous about them playing is, or not the only team, but the team I'm most nervous about them playing is the Raptors. They are defending champions and they own the Lakers this season. So a little bit nervous about that one, but we'll see. I mean, they got to make it. I think the Raptors are going to have a harder time making the finals than obviously if they got there and then beat the Lakers. Like, I think that them getting through Milwaukee will be very difficult. But if they do and the Lakers make it, it's going to not be the best matchup, obviously, because for whatever reason, Lakers just haven't been able to beat them. So that's where I would pick the Lakers to make it, and I would probably pick the Bucks, but that's kind of chalky. So I mean, the Raptors feel like they, you know, I don't know, I hate betting against or picking against the defending champs, even if they don't have, you know, their number one guy Kawhi from last year. But that's where I would see Raptors, Lakers, and I think it, you know, then I'm a little bit
a little bit more nervous
about that.
So
yeah,
you were talking about doing the three thing, and I've, yeah. This is like a sneaky, dumb Shane thing that I think about all the time. And I
sneaky dumb.
Unfortunately, have a lot of these in my brain that I wish I didn't. I always have found one of the most impressive athletic achievements in sport, current sport, is Steph always remembering to do the point to Jesus after the three.
I agree. What the heck?
I would forget all the time. I always have thought that. So, you know, like when you see like Melo doing the three on his head when he hits a three, I just was thinking to you, like if you were so pot committed to it that you were like Steph where you had to do it every time, it would be amazing if you like piped one out of bounds and had to re-tee. You've got to do the three.
That's
you're like super fired up. You've got to hit your head three times. Like Joe's like, bro, you can just leave it here. You're outside the cut line. You're playing like shit and you're doing the three on your head. But you.
What if I go one in the fairway, two in the water, and then I drop?
Oh,
three,
you miss. Yeah, you miss three. You got to do it before the drop. You had to do the three
before the drop.
Be amazing.
Melo did my two favorite celebrations in the history of sports. Honestly, they both happen to be big basketball things, but Melo makes the three, does his three on the side of his head, and then goes Sam Cassell big balls. Yes. Like right after, I'm like, you just hit the two like most epic celebrations there are, and you did it back to back. Like I couldn't have been more.
Man, Vince Carter right now. Vince Carter fans are not happy with you not throwing in Vince celebration in there. I'm going.
Wait, which
Vince
celebration?
Is this?
You're right.
I'm
that
sorry.
Wasn't on my all-time favorite.
Okay, that's all right. So,
also when you did your arms, like,
I know, I'm outside
they were just outside of my screen.
I'm outside
so I was
of
like,
camera.
I don't
dude.
Know. Are we hugging?
This is good.
Are we hugging?
So, by the way, this is great, great podcast. Great if I'm doing visuals. I'm actually happy you decided to go Bucks. My championship pick is Lakers versus the Raptors. I'm going to go Raptors back to back. I love it.
I don't hate it.
You know
it.
What? I've learned one thing from the New England Patriots, if I've learned one thing from Alabama football, it is if you're on the fence about something, go with the best coach. I just feel like the Raptors have the best coach in the NBA right now. So I'm going to go with it and just feel like they'll get it figured out. But that was NBA talk. What'd you think about it? Did you feel comfortable? Did you like it?
I didn't feel comfortable because I don't know nearly as much about that as I do golf, but I liked it. You know, I'm really excited. So are we going to get into flights? Because I have a segue.
Yeah, we're going. Let's go.
Speaking of the NBA, my first flight, which is my good idea, has everything to do with what I watched in the NBA this week. The play-in game, which baseball has started to adopt, basketball adopted this time. It better not just be for the bubble. Like,
so
I want
good.
The play-in game forever. It was a perfect system. You had to beat them twice to get in, or the Nets had to beat the Blazers twice to get in. Like, I thought it was, not the Blazers, Memphis had to beat them twice. I thought it was so cool. Golf needs a play-in game. I have an idea. The Wednesday of Boston, for instance, this week, the first playoff event, you take 124, 125, 126, 127 on the money on the FedEx Cup list. My apologies. I regret there on the FedEx Cup list that ended after Wyndham. And you have a foursome, play Wednesday of the first playoff event, televise it. The low two scores get into the playoffs.
24 and 25 get in. Brilliant.
124, 125, 126, 127. You could even do like a one stroke difference between all three of or all four of them. So give the 124 guy a one shot lead on 125 and so on. But do it Wednesday. If you get in, you get in. You get to go to Boston, play the practice round, and then play on Wednesday, put it on TV. It would be high ratings. And it's a play-in game, and I love it.
Yep, sold. I mean, it's brilliant.
All right, cool.
Said LeJay. Jay, if you're listening.
I mean, how many? We give them too many ideas.
At Max Homa 23 a day. By the way, did you see a couple of people sent us this on Twitter? I don't know if you saw it or not, but they said that there was a lot of focus on the Sunday broadcast. They talked about the focus on focusing really on the 125. And like, what are where they got these ideas from? Like,
well, hey, how about we don't just do it 1 week a year? Like, come on. Like, I know we do it because it's the Wyndham, but good God.
The Friday
like,
cut.
Show it a little longer. We'll have, the Friday cut makes sense. But now you have me looking at all the people who are close on Friday and then seeing if they backdoor made the cut and then almost won or, you know, got up in the top 10. Like, now that's all I watch for on Fridays.
We're going to take a quick break and be right back.
So I'm going to go. I don't have a best thing I heard this week. Do you?
Typically, I never have a best thing. It's either Joel swearing or nothing.
So I have a worst thing I heard this week.
Cool. Hit me.
And this goes back to kind of what we talked about early in the podcast. So, you know, I know there's a lot of there's a lot of commitment to trying to stem like online harassment and everything. And I absolutely agree with it. I do have a point on that. I do think that there's just horrible people. There have been horrible people throughout the history of the world. There were horrible people in the 1800s and 1950 and in 2020. I mean, people just suck and they're going to be mean. I feel like the horrible, hateful people aren't my least favorite people on social media. It's the well, actually, it's crew are the ones that drive me the craziest. So I wrote on Twitter during one of the matches. It was that day was blowing like 30. I mean, remember when it was just blowing like the flags like they were going to blow out of the hole? And I said, putting in high winds is almost impossible. And that brought out the Will Actually crew a lot. It's not that hard. It's not that hard. You just don't know what you're doing. It's pretty easy, actually. It's not blowing that hard.
Obviously, Shane.
These are literally the best amateur golfers in the world that are going to be PGA Tour winners in a year, year and a half, 2 years from now. And they're not making five footers. So I just, you know, when we make points on any social media outlet or anything, TV, radio, podcast, otherwise, It's mostly just for fun and to get any reaction, but you don't have to tell us that it's not impossible. It's actually not that hard of a shot is obviously one of the things we love to go to with Phil, but the Well Actually It's group was driving me a little nuts this week. And I got a lot of that because I said putting in wind is really hard. Hey, Max, you're a professional golfer. You've won on the PGA Tour. Is putting in 30 mile an hour winds really easy or is it pretty hard?
Well, actually, it's pretty hard, man. I mean, it's definitely harder than with no wind.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Yes. So I will say that. I like that. I will say, speaking of the Twitter thing, I've been doing this awesome thing. If you say anything remotely not nice to me, I just mute you.
Okay.
So it's been great.
Hey, can you check real quick on, let's see who has more muted accounts. I want you to look at yours and I'm going to look at mine. You have your phone
okay,
up?
Okay, let me, this is, how do I find this?
All right, profile. So you got to go to your Twitter, go to your app. I've hid all my social media apps in a folder on my phone called Time Wasters, by the way.
One of my things.
So go to your settings. This is, Tim, I have to cut some of this.
Muted, got it. Muted accounts. Oh, I'm up to 34. So I have.
Oh, no, you don't have to go through them. You don't have to go through the accounts. Okay. I just wanted to know your number. What is it?
34.
I'm at 200, so I'm a little higher than you.
I've got
200
impressive.
Muted accounts. So you've got some ways to pick up. It is an unbelievable alternative because they don't know you muted them, and you don't have to listen to them anymore. So
I have one right now. Just as I opened it, somebody is responding to somebody that I don't have on this anymore. So I don't even know what they're talking about, but it's awesome.
Perfect.
But speaking of Twitter, besides these muting accounts, so two people I follow, I'm not going to say any names, but two people I follow that they know each other, are complete polar opposites in politics. And they're both pretty outspoken about it.
Okay.
And, they really get into it with people, and I can't stand reading it because it's just, you know, mean to them, and then people, and then they're mean back. It's just ridiculous. I can't, it's really annoying to read, but whatever. They, you know, quote unquote, got into it on Twitter. I saw a few days ago, about their, you know, one posted something, the other one said, no, that's not whatever, but it was a very cordial Twitter argument. Nice. It was very, yes. Well, you know how the reason was, Shane, cause they know each other and they're gonna have to see each other again. Like, this is the whole thing. Like, you're never going to be that mean to somebody that you're going to see again. That's why Twitter is such an ugly place. That's why people are so free to say, Max, you suck at golf. It's like, yeah, if we were playing together right now, you would not say that because you would be a cordial person. Like most people are. But this, you know, the keyboard warrior thing applies to so many people. If it's a kind of a blank face, or a faceless person, it's like, yeah, I'm gonna rip into this person. I'm never gonna see this person again. They don't know where I live. They don't know who I am. Like, we're never gonna have to, you know, come into contact ever again. So it's like easy to rip on them. Where this, I was kind of laughing. I'm like, yeah, you guys aren't typically this nice. But oh yeah, no, I get your point. I get your point. Yeah, no, that's a good point. But like, my point is this: like, yeah, you typically just say, hey, you guys are idiots. Why do you think? This it's like, so it was funny to see just it all kind of play out like that. So that maybe that was the best thing I heard. My worst thing I heard was just typically the lack of fans at Wyndham, but we could change it for literally anything I read on Twitter that starts with well,
actually. Okay, perfect. We're in it. I've changed one of our flights to the Mark Hubbard Award for best shot you saw this week. Best, yeah, it's now officially the Hubbard Award. And by the way, I was all fired up during the Wyndham. You know, all the networks do that little eye box where the commercial's running and then they have the golf on the side.
Oh, yeah, the playing through.
So I do have a request for networks. When the shot's epic, I need a replay on the full screen.
Yeah, go back to it. Good God.
So obviously we've been having a great time with Mark Hubbard lately because you had him as your best shot you saw a week. And then, of course, Joel, not knowing that you'd thrown him in there the week before, had it as his best shot he saw last week. So now it's just called that. That's the category now. So that's whatever. So they're going to Hubbard on Sunday and they go to the Ion box and he's about to hit driver off the deck on a par five with water right. I mean, obviously a righty with driver off the deck, miss is going to be right. I'm like, dude, this is going to be awesome. He hits it to like 25, 30 feet. You know, it's this unbelievable golf shot. And I wanted a replay because I didn't know the number. They didn't have it on the graphic. I wanted to know how far. And I just, you know, I just wanted a little bit more information on it because we don't get see a lot of pros hit driver off the deck. So that wasn't the shot. If he'd have hold it, probably the shot. My Mark Hubbard Award this week goes to my friend Nick Woodruff, who careered it the other day.
Yes.
He careers it. I mean, plays unreal. He probably had five shots that I can include in the category, but I've just got to include. So it was myself, my buddy Andrew, my buddy Nick, and Paige Spranick, who has a podcast on iHeartRadio Network, and she's a friend of ours. You should listen to her podcast. And I was playing with Nick and Paige.
Playing around
with Paige Spranick, with Paige Renee. So Paige is Andrew's partner. I'm with Woody. Woody's playing out of his mind. He's getting 21 or 22 shots. He made a birdie on 16. It's just a bloodbath. You've played Phoenix Country Club. I mean, you know the golf course.
Yep.
He is basically on 18 tee box with his second shot on the 17th hole. So there are bunkers left of the green. The green slopes away from you if you're left, and there's water on the right side. So you're screwed. I mean, you've got nothing. This is a...
Not to mention you're on the 18th tee box, so you clearly aren't very good.
Yeah, I mean, you are 30
you're
yards...
60 yards.
You're 30 or 40 yards left of the green. So this is a golf shot that if you had this golf shot, Max, I would say you probably have a 1 in 5 chance of getting it inside 25 feet. You know, I mean, that would be a really good golf shot if you hit it. Paige is in the bunker. Woody hits it to like 20 feet. I mean, it's this unbelievable golf shot. Flop shot. You know, he doesn't even know what a flop shot is. He's throwing it way up in the air with spin. Hits it, whatever. We've got a few presses going. Paige makes her bunker shot.
God.
Makes it. I told her, I go, I'm going to have to start promoting your YouTube videos of bunker shots. She hit a fairway bunker shot on 16 that was unbelievable, and then makes this bunker shot on 17. Woody rolls it in, up and down, makes par, 4 for 3 for the halve.
How pissed was Paige?
Oh my God, just her face was, it was 120 degrees. We were hot. There was no wind. Just dejected look on her face. She walked off. Yeah. She's like, she doesn't really curse much. She's not really a big curser on the golf course. Maybe an F-bomb came out of her mouth as she was walking off the green. But it was just one of those moments, like you saw it in Woody's face, that he knew he'd done something that he might not do for a long, long time was that up and down. So that was my best shot. That was my Mark Hubbard Award shot of the week.
That's awesome. I like that. Speaking of the Mark Hubbard part of this Mark Hubbard Award, to your point about the playing through eye on camera thing, do the commentators not know that we can't hear them, that we can only see it in this tiny box? Like, why do they never refer back to the shot? Like, why?
At Fox, we had that, but I think it's because all of our amateur events didn't have commercials. So maybe we just didn't go to it as much as I remember, you know, the other networks going to it, because obviously they have commercials all the time. So they're showing a commercial and showing the golf. But I don't know the answer to that.
They didn't even like refer. And this isn't just one thing. Like, someone will make a putt and then
there's
be
no
like,
reference to it.
Yeah. It's like, okay. Like, was that for par? Was that for birdie? Like, I have no idea. And that Mark Hubbard shot was especially fun just for me, because Mark he's the top two best drivers off the deck in the world right now, I think.
Him and Ricky?
Him and Mark Leishman. Okay. Mark Leishman
Ricky's
is
really
a
good.
Joke. Ricky's good, but Mark does it almost every round. He'll throw a ball on the ground because he doesn't like hitting three wood, and when a hole is very, very straight, like, so it has very little curve, he feels uncomfortable, so he'll just put it on the deck. He has great stories about this. He has one with his wife that I love where hopefully we'll have Mark on one day and he can tell the story, but he was, his wife used to caddy for him here and there. He dropped the ball on the tee as he normally does. There's like a 240 carry over this marsh, but it's one
is
of those
it by the way this is two marshes.
Straight.
Is this Hubbard or Leishman?
I'm sorry. Oh, maybe you need to be a Mark to be great off the driver off the deck. Didn't even think about that. Yeah. So Hub, sorry. He has like a 230, 240 cover, throws the ball on the deck. Like, he does this all the time. That's why I bring this up. So when he was hitting the shot at Wyndham, I was like, this is going to be great, because you think, oh, this is a hard shot. Like, he does this all the time. Like, multiple times around on certain courses. So, so he throws it off the deck in Savannah, I think, in the Webb event, and he hits it, and he said he thought he hit it really good, and the ball barely covers the marsh. So it only flew like 231. And he said that he felt like he made a good pass at it, and they're walking off the tee. Megan, his wife, who's caddying for him, goes, "Hey, I didn't know what I was supposed to say, but when you were behind the ball kind of rolled back into a little hole, and I didn't know if I didn't want to mess you up." And he goes, "Yes, you need to tell me that." Like, that ball made it over the marsh by like a foot. And she goes, "Oh, I just didn't want to mess you up." And he's like, "That is exactly the
that
kind of stuff I need
up,
to know." So when he pulls out driver and I see him in this playing through, I don't have a very big TV. It's this small little box. I'm like, oh my God, this is going to be so sick. It's 20 feet, 25 feet. It just was like, he never happened. We never heard a distance. It sucked. My Mark Hubbard shot of the week, however, I have two. Because the one thing I wanted to really bring up on last week's podcast that I knew that Joel would do a better job than I could at the PGA, because he played all the rounds and he almost, he was in contention and he had the lead at one point. Like, so much cooler to hear his experience of the major than mine, who obviously missed the cut. But I did have one really cool moment. The best shot I saw someone hit that week, which ended up being tied with Mark, or beaten by Mark, as you know, hence why this award is named after the man. But I played with Rory McIlroy on a practice round on Wednesday, and we just played the back. And on the 11th hole, he made a hole in one. And it was amazing, because I looked back at him and I was dying laughing because he was so mad. He's like, "Why can't I save that for like one day, in the future?" And also him and Harry, his caddy, had a little like wager going on that if Rory shot under par on that back nine in the practice round, he like won dinner or whatever, because Rory needs like a free meal. And Rory had started birdie eagle and it was 3 under through two on a very hard golf course, and Harry was like, "Cool, I'm like sick." So that was mine from last week. This week it was probably Strafacci's shot in 18, the 36th hole, because most of my best shots I've ever hit, most of them have not come on the 18th hole or in the heat of the moment. But I refer to those the most as my favorites, because as all of us, when the heat is on, when the pressure's high, that's the kind of stuff that makes you so excited. That's the kind of stuff that you feel like builds character. That's the stuff that you hearken back to. The greats of the game, most of Tiger's shots we remember are on the last hole, last couple holes. So Strafacci's probably hit a better shot that week, but under the gun in that moment, 36 holes worth of grinding and just amazing golf. And he gets up and hits an amazing shot right when
he did the drive, which again, that drive is a little tighter than it maybe looks, because there's a little pot bunker out there that if you beat it into it, you're dead.
Is it darker than the cameras make it seem?
It's foggier. It was foggier.
Narrower than the cameras.
It was foggier than the cameras play. But he lost like a sleeve of balls on 17. I mean, He made a million and then gets up on 18 and pipes one and hits that four iron that was one of the better iron shots you'll ever
see.
So
pretty.
To close it out. I mean, it was like, it did feel very Dustin-y at Oakmont, you know, where it's like, you have to pull the shot off. He hits it right at it. It was beautiful.
Those nails.
We're going to take a quick break and be right back.
We haven't touched on this and we're running long. So just quickly, FedEx Cup playoffs start this week.
Yeah.
Are you excited?
I'm pumped.
You had a week off?
Had a week off. Got a lot of rest, which was cool. I have only played the front nine in Boston. I happened to be there for my last US amateur. It was in the Boston area. So I went to TPC one day in practice. Got to play a few holes. I like it. Looked pretty cool. Haven't obviously seen it in years and don't know a ton about it from you know, experience. Only seen it on TV. But playoffs are fun, man. It's exciting. It's a little bit of a different year, but it still feels like that same hype. You know, my goal obviously is to win and play best I can. I need to play well to get into that top 30 and get to Eastlake, which would be my first time there. So that's what I've been thinking about, you know, most of the year. Obviously got cut short a little bit, but game should be in a good spot. You know, I feel like with the PGA, as poorly as I played, I feel like I learned. I had a big breakthrough with the putting yet again. I feel like that stuff is just, the putting has just only gotten better, which is really exciting. The stuff I'm doing with my putting guy Derek has been awesome. It's been an exciting progression to watch because I feel like I am getting it really fast, and we just find these little things here and there that just make it great. I putted amazing at PGA. My short game was great at PGA, and it was just my ball striking all of a sudden stinks for the last 2 weeks. But I think that's the best time to have a week off after that. So I'm excited about that. But the playoffs are fun. I know people make fun of the FedEx Cup all the time, but it is really exciting because now we're going to get week in and week out cutoffs for, you know, the seven this past week Wyndham, we had the 125, about to have the 70 cutoff, then we're gonna have the 30 cutoff. Like, it is a race, the points are elevated. I this is the stuff we play for. It you know, jacks us all up to do this. So I'm stoked. You know, Golf playoffs aren't the same quite like, you know, NBA playoffs, but it's still fun. You know, it makes you it feels like an elevated event. And since no events have had fans, the elevation comes from what you put
in the field,
in your mind.
Right?
So yeah, the major, the field, if it's a major, if it's what the field's like and what the stakes are, and this will be the best field and the highest stakes, you know, just like a major. So it'll be really exciting.
Yeah. So, you know, one thing, I mean, to your point about people harping on the FedEx Cup playoffs is, you know, the one thing I think the PGA Tour needs deserves credit for when it comes to the FedEx Cup playoffs in particular is the money has made it to where you guys care as much about the FedEx Cup playoffs, the finale, Tour Championship, winning it. I feel like players care as much about that as they do about a major now, which is all they really wanted. I mean, they wanted the interest inside the ropes to be at a level where you could feel. I mean, I felt like Koepka last year, I don't want to say he choked because I don't like to use that term, but, you know, I mean, there is so much at stake in terms of your financial. I mean, the guy's set for life, but you are even more set for life and another generation if you win a FedEx Cup, right? I mean, it is a ton of money. I mean, and it's not just the money. It's bonuses from your sponsors. It is bonuses from finishing a certain point. I mean, there's more than just the money. You see the check handed out from the PGA Tour for the players. So I feel like there is stress in these FedEx Cup playoffs that you only see at major championships. Do you feel like that's fair?
Totally. I think one of the things that gets harped on again about the tour, especially with this, and the players, especially with this FedEx Cup thing, is, oh, it's so much money. They, you know, and they don't even care about money. They just care about majors. Like, I think that the most players say, that's why I think Joel's a breath of fresh air. They say, I don't really care about the money, because we're conditioned to say that that's not what drives us. It's the wins and it's the championships. There's only a handful of people that win tons of championships and tons of majors. Like, that doesn't happen. Even if you look at Jordan Spieth, has won three majors like that. And that's a ton of majors for someone his age. So, like, everybody is motivated by money. Like, I don't care. Even, I mean, maybe we're taking out someone like Tiger and Phil because they have so much, but even then, I bet you they're motivated by money. Tiger still, you know, will do things for a a price. Like there's still money still matters to even him. So, and it would matter to everyone that listens to this. But if you played for $20 instead of $15, you would be a little bit more nervous, like, and more excited to play. If we had one day match and we up the stakes, it would make it bigger. So these FedEx playoffs make that feel bigger. And my point about this all isn't that, it's unfair to Harp. It's just that, if you want to see exciting golf and you want to see Rory McIlroy try his hardest and see tons of emotions, like when he won the FedEx Cup, like the first time, like it was like super exciting. He was as outwardly, emotional as I've seen him with a roar. Well, the reason he got that way is because, yeah, sure, he won the FedEx Cup. I'm sure he didn't care about the money that much, but the reason he really wanted to win was because of the money makes the FedEx Cup feel like it's a major. So that, of course, yeah, it's the magnitude of it. So whether he recognizes that or not, it doesn't matter. You get to watch the most exciting golf, and you get to watch it because you get the top guys as excited as ever to try to win something. So you can't do it both ways. You can't make fun of how much money it is and they don't really care, and then also be like, but it's exciting to watch because why is it exciting to watch? It's exciting to watch because of that. Because you know, the East Lake, especially Sunday, you see a lot of things go on and a lot of things change, and you see the players show that kind of they have a reaction to it. And that stuff is all of us want to see when we watch golf. We want to be entertained because it looks like the players really care, and the players do care. Now, is it because the finance part of it is the main motivation? Probably. But does that really freaking matter to you? Like, you get to still watch the most exciting thing. That's how I see it, at least. And it's really cool. And it's cool for someone like me to have an opportunity. I get bonuses in my contracts, which stage I make it to in the playoffs. We get retirement money typically from FedEx for making it even just to the playoffs, but it has whatever number you finish on that FedEx Cup at the end of the year. Like, that's your number you would make typically. Like, that's the stuff that I obviously want to win and get to to East Lake and all that. But a big reason I want to make it to East Lake is I get to Kapalua and I get to play that tournament, which again is no cut, and that's going to help my world ranking, and I get to get in most of the majors. Like, that's the stuff that all the motivation. That's why I love the playoffs, and that's why the PGA Tour does deserve credit, because they've made a part of the season that typically became quite boring after the majors, although this year we have the majors after them. But it's usually boring where it's not anymore. Last year playing the playoffs was as exciting as a tournament run I've ever had. It was just really cool to be around and to know how elevated it all was. So yeah, I'm stoked for the playoffs. I hope the fans love it as much as we do. But I mean, I'm trying to look at it as unbiased as I can. When I watch on TV, when I wasn't in the playoffs, I thought it was exciting. I thought it was cool. You guys know how much I like keeping up with the Friday cut. This was like a weekly cut thing. You have a Friday cut where some people are going to automatically get bounced from the chance to move on. And then you're going to have a Sunday cut where you're going to see people either come in or come out of that top 70, of that top 30. I think that is so fun to watch, regardless of who ends up winning. I hope that the coverage focuses mostly on that and maybe not so much on who wins. Or obviously you have to focus on both, but I do think that those cuts are so cool to watch the line, because that is the exciting part of of each week for the playoffs. But I don't know. I really enjoy it. And I hope everyone does too, because it is exciting and we do care. The PGA Tour players care about, where they finish on that FedEx Cup list. I promise you that. As much as some people may play it Joe Cool and say, I just only care about majors like that. I promise you that's not true, because Rory said it last year. I played with him at the Northern Trust, and someone said, Rory, take home that $10 million. And I remember he slipped out something about money doesn't, that's not my motivating thing. And then he ends up winning the FedEx Cup. And he talked about how he regretted saying that in a previous interview, because it really, maybe the money didn't, but him winning that thing meant a lot to him. He was stoked about that. And that's Rory. That's our highest guy.
Yeah, he wants another one of those Coca-Cola cooler things you get.
Yeah,
those
exactly.
Things look sweet.
Who doesn't?
What I like about it is I think there is a storyline for every day, kind of what you and I've talked about a lot on the podcast, is very true. Every day, every tournament, there's a storyline. And I think it gives everybody a chance to kind of punctuate a solid season, a good season, a great season, all of those. And on top of it, outside of, Rory or Justin Thomas or Spieth winning or Tiger winning the FedEx Cup, occasionally you have a Billy Horschel or a Bill Haas or somebody like that who is, listen, they're financially set. They're not struggling for money, but this changes their life now. The FedEx Cup winning changes their life going forward for the rest of it, because it is a hell of a lot of money, and that money sits and, you know, it accumulates, and it's a great thing for people like that. So for you, every week is a good thing and a chance to change maybe a year from a B plus to an A minus, or an A minus to an A plus, or whatever. So,
I mean, I only have one goal each year, is to make I don't do goals, but my goal every year is make East Lake. I don't care if I'm number one in the world at one point, my goal will be to make East Lake, because I think it is the absolute definition of a good year. You had a good year, or a great year. That's a great year. You finished top 30 on the PGA Tour in a whole season. That is consistent year-long success. And I think that is a big deal. So, and I think that would be for almost just about everybody that plays this game. Making East Lake is okay.
What's up, Scotty?
I know, I get it too, Scotty. I'm trying to make the East Lake. I know you want the better dog food. I'm working on it, but that it's a big deal.
It's huge. Last thing, and we'll go. I had to withdraw from a golf tournament this past week.
Yeah.
Because Rarity, being a dad is the reason. That's the official reason. I was in the first fairway, the first round.
So you hit the fairway?
Hit the fairway.
God, you were going to shoot 59.
I know. Right. Hey, by the way, right in the middle. Right in the middle of the fairway. Playing Greyhawk, playing in a stroke play event here in Arizona. And I had my push cart, obviously. And I am walking down there, and I made the mistake. I played the Arizona Open a few weeks ago, and I was on my phone at the turn. I wasn't playing very well, but we had a huge wait at the turn. Pulled my phone out, and it was a bad move because there was a lot of like real life shit on there, and I shouldn't have pulled the phone out. So I'm going to turn my phone off, walk into the first fairway, and I have the Cindy text. It's like, hey, call me. It's emergency. My son was really sick. She has to work on Thursdays in the office. She can't miss work. So I literally, Max, I'm walking on the fairway. I'm like, I don't know what to, you know, I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
And I call her, and she's like, you know, Henry's throwing up, and he's scream crying, and we can't take him to any daycare or anything like that.
Did you tell him you were on 59 watch?
I was on 59 watch after leaving Starbucks. But yeah, I mean, I was like, I was feeling it. And I just walked up and picked up my ball, and I looked at the guys. I was like, hey guys, I gotta go. My son's sick. And they're both just kind of like confused. One of them you could tell was younger. Maybe he doesn't have kids. The older guy, I could tell, probably had a little bit better understanding about it. But I mean, I couldn't imagine what it must feel like if you see some dude on the first hole of a first day of a 4-day tournament hit the fairway and grab his ball and walk up. They must have been like, what in the hell is going on? But that was a bummer.
I'm just not feeling it today, guys. I hit the fairway. I'm not supposed to hit this first fairway.
You know, I was really excited. I was fired up. I hadn't played Greyhawk in a while. And yeah, so that was my...
I hope in the future, Henry's like, Dad, why'd you ground me? I want to go out tonight. And you're like, you know, I would let you. I know this is kind of a gray area rule that we have in the bacon household. You ate turkey bacon, not real bacon. That's against our morals. But this is a gray area. I would let you go out tonight. However, this one time,
remember 2020?
You don't remember, yeah, but you remember 2020, the year that sucked for everybody. Yeah, well, I hit the first fairway, and everyone thought I was going to win, and I had to leave because you couldn't suck it up. Look at you, you're healthy right now.
Yeah.
Like you would have been fine.
Double ear infection and projectile vomiting. You big old wimp. You 14 month old wimp. Get it together. That is. The sideshow that is amateur golf in real life when you have to leave because your kid's sick. I don't think Strafossi's walking off 18 at the amateur because his sister's not feeling 100%. But,
exactly.
That's the difference.
It's a little different.
Hey, play well. Have some fun this week. Excited to watch. And we'll, you know, I mean, I'm just expecting great things. By the way, I've played the golf course. If you need some help, I'll send it out on
Twitter.
I'll send some stuff on Twitter for sure.
Yeah, my people will call your people.
Yeah, thanks for listening. I know this is a little longer. That's just part of life, man. You're just going to have to enjoy it. Gabe, if it's too long for you, speed up the podcast speed. 1.5.
Yeah,
you 1. Can do
5.
That. We'll sound like crazy people. Max, enjoyed it. I'll talk to you next week.
Thank you. Everybody, wash your hands. Talk to you guys next week.
Get a Grip with Max Homa and Shane Bacon is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.